Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this episode of the Force Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report.
Boom, 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 boom.
Powerful drums followed by a little thoughtful. What instrument did you use when you were making that sound with your mouth? What instrument was it?
I call it the Kubrick because I'm.
A Kubrick straight from Ken's mouth to welcome you all to the Clone Wars Report. We love not only hearing the music, our 15-second version of the podcast is just what music does Ken make this episode, but the whole podcast is diving into individual episodes and arcs of the great Clone Wars animated series. We are burning through season one. We're getting close to the end. In this episode, we're looking at one standalone episode. It is called Trespass. It is from season one. It is episode 15. It is written by Stephen Melching, directed by Brian Kalin O'Connell. That's a good name, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a name you don't hear much around the Clone Wars parts. I love that's been part of this too, of just seeing who wrote a lot of these episodes. I don't mean this is any slight against Filoni. He's just becomes the focal point. He's the man in the cowboy hat. I get it. But I think Henry Gilroy is just as important to a lot of the formation of the Clone Wars. There's so many people. And Filoni would say that. He'd be the first to say that. So this has been part of the journey of going through and seeing the names behind the show.
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely just, it's a part of, you know, looking at creative works when there isn't a single person responsible for them. And yeah, Filoni has become the symbol, but he is the first to say, like, hey, yeah, Henry Gilroy and Stephen Melching appears in the credits quite a bit. Lots of other great people, mm-hmm. Katie Lucas, all sorts of great creators contributed to it. And that's great for us to remember that the cowboy hat of Clone Wars creation is larger than just Dave Filoni. So let's dive into Trespass. Here's a quick summary. Obi-Wan and Anakin travel to the remote ice world of Orto Plutonia after a clone outpost is attacked. They are accompanied by the leader of Pantora, Chairman Cho, and the Pantoran senator, Chuchi. Chairman Cho believes the planet to be unoccupied and therefore can be claimed by the nearby moon of Pantora, and indeed has been claimed. The attacks on both the Republic and Separatist outpost occurred after the droids attacked the native Tulls. Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Chairman Cho, Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Senator Chuchi strive for a peaceful diplomatic solution, but stubborn Chairman Cho wants the ice world for Pantora and seeks to wipe out the Tulls. Unfortunate violence, emergency holocalls, and non-Jedi intervention ensue. Great episode. Great title. What was your overall reaction, Ken? Did you like it, love it, struggle with it? Where were you at on Trespass?
That was one of your best summaries. That was just a great one. Because I tell you, this is a kind of a standalone episode in a way, right? And you've just described a pretty epic story and movie, right? This is some big stuff going on, and I love this. I'm there for it. Great stuff.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So you like this episode? Is this get to your love category or where are you at?
I would, my initial when this episode popped up, and I didn't even look at the thumbnail. I was like, episode 15, Trespass. Okay. And it comes up this morning, when I'm watching it and, I go, oh, it's the Anakin and the Han jacket episode. Yeah. I remember that. So it has a warm spot in my heart, but I think, and true to what we've been discussing a lot of these, this rewatch report, to really drill down on it, I really loved what's here in this episode. I think it's pretty big statements on Star Wars, on the Star Wars story. So I loved it. But back then, I think I liked it, and I liked a lot of the characters, but it didn't stand out other than the jacket. The Anakin jacket. But today, so glad to revisit it because I really do love what's going on here.
Yeah, yeah. When I first saw it, I really enjoyed all of the Hoth jackets, but in Clone era, all the various Hoth looks, all the snow looks, but reinterpreted for the Clone Wars. And I was like, it's a bunch of Mooftacks. Like, this is great. And I did enjoy the surface stuff. And I enjoyed the surface stuff again, and I think I appreciated the themes. But again, diving deep, this doesn't feel like a standalone episode. It feels like another view on some of the important ideas of the Clone Wars era that are being discussed in this first season. So I would definitely, for this viewing, slot this into a high like, dancing on the edge of love, but a high like. I really liked that it was just so physically beautiful, right?
All right, dancing on the edge of love. That is a great Bruce Hornsby song, right? I think 87.
We should put a spot list Spotify playlist together.
Yeah,
of imaginary songs. I love how much this episode is just really physically beautiful with the snow and the shots of the Tulls riding their Narglatches. It's all just looks amazing. And then I feel like from all of these episodes in the first season, or rather a lot of them, are different views on violence in war. And this is a really great view of truly pointless violence. That pointless violence happens. It happens easily. And then kind of just in this episode, working through how do you break that cycle of violence, even when it's not really, that's not a large point to it. Plus, the other thing I liked about this episode that I would not have been able to tell you before I rewatched it, I don't think there's a single lightsaber activation. And I think of this like you do, as like, that's the Anakin's wearing Han's jacket. And Obi-Wan's got the cool Hoth jacket. And then I would have never remembered. They don't actually ever activate their lightsabers.
That's a great point. Oh, yeah. Wow. I didn't, pick, but I didn't pick up on that either. And just shows you, you know, how engaging the story was.
Yeah, which is just, it's kind of a powerful part of the episode to me, a subtle thing, but a powerful thing. Let's talk about the moral. The moral is real short, real clear this time around for this episode. Arrogance diminishes wisdom. How did that land with you?
Yeah, you're right. You're like, oh boy. But I love taking what you think of when you hear a word. Maybe it's because I have a limited vocabulary these days. I didn't used to. Then I worked in a job that didn't require a lot of words to be used. And I lost a lot of them. I swear to God, I had this conversation with my friend who worked the job with me a lot. And I've mentioned it before here. But so when you hear arrogance, I tie that to overconfidence, right? Mm-hmm. Fine line between arrogance and confidence and self-confidence. And I think, you know, I think self-confidence is important. I think knowing what you're capable and knowing what you're worth is important. And arrogance pushes a lot of things beyond that. But so I want to go beyond that. I see arrogance a lot of time being a shield to a greater fear, and having it has arrogance can be tied to lack of growth, stubbornness, which you mentioned already, fear of losing control over what you think you know, and I suffer from it too. I sometimes wish I was more of an arrogant person. I'm sometimes so self-loathing to my own, but you know what I mean. Of just there is a little bit. Of it isn't, I'm so good at hitting a baseball right now. This is the other way. It's like, oh, you're presenting me some facts or a situation where I could maybe change, grow, or go against what I do. No, I don't need you for nothing. I got this. I'm good. You know, that's the arrogance that's on display here for me. And I just love kind of seeing how it takes a definition and expands it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love how simple and direct it is that it asks you to think about what arrogance really is. I think you're entirely right to contrast it with confidence, and then says it diminishes wisdom. So like, yeah, arrogance is one of those words of like, yeah, we all know that's a bad word. That's a word, not a swear word. You can say it on TV and everything, but it, you know, that arrogance itself is a bad thing. But then to get to the why of it so quickly, if it diminishes wisdom, obviously the episode plays that out. But I love what you're saying about confidence is great. Confidence is necessary. And what makes arrogance different from confidence? It's coming. It's like dark confidence, right? It's being absolutely sure you're right. And I love what you said about arrogance often being, I want to be right. So I will not even entertain the possibility that I could be wrong. That's where, you know, arrogance comes in, or what you're saying too, of like, I think when people are arrogant, it is coming from a place of fear. And when I think through like my own life, I think moments where I felt confident and it feels like a good thing, like, you know, confidence, light side, arrogance, the dark side. When I think of confidence, it's, I have been sure that I can do something and it is about me. In the times that I've been arrogant have been a little bit more outward directed. If somebody will say something and it will be like maybe about something, a field that I've spent a lot of time in, and I want to be right because I've spent so much time there. And I will arrogantly say, no, I know that. And then I don't. And it is, or I was wrong in that one instance. And it like you're saying, it is arrogance comes from fear and control, and confidence comes from just, I think, trusting yourself.
Yeah, and that trust is key. And the idea of, to me, we all can have flashes of arrogance. I always sometimes say I'm grumpy Luke on an island, and sometimes it's just me being a bit blustery because I have some strong opinions on something. And I feel that in my darker times, like, well, that was kind of an arrogant outlashing. You can change. You can grow past the arrogance if you're aware of it, or you can stand stubborn behind it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stubborn standing in this episode. That was almost the entire episode of the arrogance diminishing the wisdom. So let's dive into that. What big themes did you think were at stake? What ideas?
I have to scroll my notes down because I just said, I guess at stake was the Anakin in a Han jacket. Oh, wait, I already said that note.
we're not done. We're going to spend most of the podcast on that Han jacket because it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, and there's a figure of it, right? We've ranked that before.
Yeah, and you included it high, I believe.
Yeah, I don't own it yet. I got to get that. So, all right, what's the big theme? What ideas are at stake? I'll tell you what's at stake. Lives are at stake. And the idea is lives not being at stake. This episode, I was kind of upset, distraught over the needless death of the clones and the Talls and the Nargatches.
I got this written down. The Narglatches.
Narglatches.
Yes. If you can't remember, just think of the way Jerry Lewis would more likely say it.
Narglatch. Yes. There's one that gets shot. Several get shot. There's one that gets shot, and they added a whimper of a dying animal. Oh, God. It upset me.
Yeah.
So the theme of this is look where this can – none of this needed to happen. You know, none of it for this little kind of we got the Clone War going on. Let's break it down to this small level. And what's at stake is these kind of arrogance and these kind of actions are killing people here, and they can affect tenfold those lives in the galaxy. To me, that was the first big thing was at stake.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. And I love it that that's the focus of this episode, because we've seen other episodes where like, oh, the Separatists have this malevolence, this terrible weapon, and the Jedi are truly trying to stop it. Or, you know, Ryloth has become a focal point of the war and they need to try to defend there. And that's not what's happening here. And it made me really think that this episode was definitely, you know, arrogance. Obviously, Chairman Cho is arrogance, and he is, because of that, he's far from wisdom. That's really clear moral of the episode. But I was really gravitating towards this thematic idea of breaking the cycle of violence, and in particular, pointless violence, because we have this starting point in the episode that the whole thing is really pointless. We get that from great Tom Kane announcer voice that, you know, the Republic and the Separatists are having like a literal Cold War there for no obvious strategic reason. They're both just have a tiny base to literally stare at one another. It's a literal Cold War on a frozen planet where they're just staring at each other just in case, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we start even in the voiceover with, this is pointless. This is just fear and paranoia. It's just one side staring at the other just in case. And then, you know, we learn that Chairman Cho, through all of these various kind of rigid political rules, thinks that the planet belongs to the great Pantoran government. And I keep waiting for the dime to drop in the episode of like, oh, he secretly knows that there's this valuable mineral, or he knows that the Separatists are secretly blah, blah, blah. And you come to find that he truly just wants the planet out of like nationalistic pride of Pantora, out of fear of being seen to be weak and losing it, out of the paranoia that the planet will eventually become strategically important. He's got that line to Senator Chuchi where he says, I've seen 100 planets rise and fall through force of arms. So you really get the suggestion almost that he has seen battle enough that he's just stuck in that mode, that battle will come here, so I must control this. And then, of course, there's just the horrible attitude towards the Talls being uncivilized and savages and all that. But, you know, we're starting from this point of like, this is not an important place, but Cho is obsessed with it out of a little bit of kind of fear of war. Mm. You know, somebody might take it, so I got to hold on to it because it's mine. And then that's all of that sort of that cycle of violence starts to kind of repeat in the episode where right away, Obi-Wan stops Anakin from reaching for his lightsaber. Obi-Wan and Anakin, you know, try to have negotiations. They understand that the Talls were attacked by the droids, and so the Talls lashed out. And instead of perpetuating the cycle, both Obi-Wan and Anakin are like, you know what? We don't need to. We understand why. You know, we could be mad that you, Anakin in particular, could be like, you slaughtered clones. The lightsaber's coming out. But he listens, you know, to his higher angels. He takes the higher path and he breaks that cycle. And we even get this with Thy Sen, son of sons, leader of the Talls, where he is willing to stop the aggression. And he asks twice, two different times, for Chairman Cho to just leave before war begins. Mm. And Chairman Cho just won't listen. So we get this cycle of violence repeating and repeating until ultimately Senator Chuchi is, you know, empowered by the Pantoran government and the Jedi to make her choice. And she, that end scene between her and Thy Sen is her really making the choice to stop the cycle of violence and to take that risk that he won't agree to it. Now, after, as you were saying, all these clones and all these talls and these poor Narglatches have all kind of died over nothing but Cho's arrogance and pride and fear and possessiveness. And then to see Chuchi walk out there and go, this is how you do it. This is how you break the cycle. I don't think we need to fight. I think that this is your planet and you should have it. And I'm putting any weapon down. I'm kind of symbolizing putting that aggression of the past down by, you know, using your tradition and putting the spike with the hat. Here's the other guy. His ideas are done and let's stop. And then they really emphasize that by that great shot of Thai Sen pulling that spear back. And, you know, Chuchi took that big risk. That spear could have gone right through her heart, but she broke the cycle of violence. And so does Thai Sen. And to me, it was just like, wow, some of it's really straightforward. But when I looked at it through that lens of the cycle and how do you break it, I was really moved.
Yeah, ooh, great stuff. Four Center, well said. There's a lot in there that you said that I want to touch upon here. First of all, going back to the original idea of arrogance, and there's some great stuff you said about Chairman Chow, where there is a bit of experience and knowledge that he has that maybe doesn't start in an incorrect spot, but you can see where arrogance just takes that and twists it.
Yeah.
Right? There's probably something he's seen and probably some thought of, if we don't do claim this, the separatists could come here. In fact, they're already, you know, there's some point where you could have that discussion and go, yep, I see what you're saying. But then the arrogance just kind of wipes that wisdom away, going back to the original goal. I'd love to get the towels. When we, you know, a lot of unnecessary death here. I'll say this. I think the towels and the towels going to this fight is, there's some honor on their side. You want to talk about, they are defending their people. And there's some interesting conversations to be had there, but which is why it's even more important that they, Thai Sen breaks that cycle. Like you said, it's pretty powerful in that moment there. Senator Ryo Chuchi's line at the end there, to die for one's people is a great sacrifice, to live for one's people, an even greater sacrifice. I really focus in on that too. And I think it's about something what you said, some stuff you say in there, Joseph, about breaking this stuff there. What is the sacrifice that she's talking about for her? And it might be sacrifice of procedures, rules, regulations, what we believe from a textbook point of view, or standing down and maybe eating some crow here, you know, having to admit mistakes. There's a lot of things that I put into that second use of the sacrifice in her sentence there. And I love thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that too. And to me, I really just kind of took that as this bigger idea of like, taking the high road and, you know, admitting that you failed, admitting that you made a mistake, in these really difficult, times, trying to thread the needle and know what is right. All of that is complex and difficult. And to have all this responsibility on my shoulders as a leader, that's the true sacrifice, not just rigidly going, you're the bad guys, I will kill you. Oh, you killed me, avenge me. And like his thinking is so linear. And what she is saying is like, it's the greater sacrifice to give to your people to try to handle all these complex issues and find the right way.
Yeah. And complex indeed. And there's no clear cut paths all the time. You know what I mean? And that goes beyond just this episode. Some of the stuff that you're saying taps into what I also think is a bit of a theme or an idea that is at stake is something that comes up. And I think I've mentioned this a few times, and it's based in some real world conversations I've had with some, a real close friend of mine too, out here in LA and everything, but just false ideas of strength. And there's a moment there where Cho says, Senator, I'm willing to fight and die for our people, which by the way is in and of itself. That's a good thing. I'd say it's time to ask yourself if you're brave enough to do the same. And there's not a lot of true courage that he's showing here right now. There's stubbornness, perhaps even stupidity, that's going on from him. And I don't want to completely insult Cho. She gives him a little bit of honor to die for one's people. That's a great sacrifice. All right. So he did, but he didn't have to.
No.
And it's misplaced bravery for me.
Yeah.
It's misplaced. It's like I said, it's a false idea of what true strength is. And sometimes it is standing at the gate and guarding and fighting and everything. And that might be a little bit what Thai Sen and his team is doing there. But anyways, it ties into that a little bit too for her, her, her thoughts.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, and you touched on this earlier too about like, could there be wisdom? What was at some point in his past was it Chairman Cho's you know, arrogance? Was it wisdom? Mm-hmm. You know, how much of this is because he did have a lot of battles, and it's really interesting to think of the episodes we just watched where the Lerman are nobly just trying to stay out of the war, but then the war does come to them like unfair, unwanted. Separatist destruction is coming for them, and their challenge is to stand up, you know, and mm-hmm. and defend themselves against this. And so we just saw that episode where you could almost put some of Chairman's lines into that episode, and maybe they'd make some sense as wisdom. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, there's nothing happening on this planet. He just wants to control it out of fear and paranoia and pride. And so his wisdom turns into arrogance because he's not actually assessing what's truly going on. It's more about him than it is about the actual situation. And that's just the kind of rich storytelling about all these different kinds of battles and conflicts within the Clone Wars that I'm really enjoying.
Well, and a lot of this ties to the bigger Star Wars picture of everyone's favorite Yoda quote that I see tossed around a lot of fear, anger, hate, suffering. And I think that use of fear by Yoda there is misinterpreted a lot. And there's obviously always different. You're going to interpret things differently. And there's maybe different interpretations to be had at times. But for this, Cho uses, if you're brave enough, which to me shows, you know, are you afraid? Are you afraid to do this? And man, like everything Cho is doing is coming from fear. He's the fearful one here. Chuchi's the one who's like got to stand up against him, got to stand up against traditions and rules and regulations of her people. And as he said at the very end, stands in front of Thy Sen, ready to either he makes peace or he puts that spear through my heart.
Yeah.
Every bit of bravery is from her. And there's no bravery from him in the classic sense, you know, and I don't want to take him, cut him down as a person. I don't know what he did 20 years ago, but he's here now. And that's what's important to me. I always like, we have to deal with where you are now.
Yeah, no, and now he makes a lot of bad choices. Touching on another big theme that I really appreciated in this episode is just kind of general open mind versus closed mind felt like this great contrast. I love Obi-Wan. This to me is a great Obi-Wan episode because it leans into his strengths of, well, let's just try to see things from every point of view. Let's not get the lightsaber out first. Let's poke around and see what happens. And we really get Detective Obi-Wan with an open mind he's going in there looking for evidence. He is making casts of footprints. He is stroking his beard. He's making no assumptions. He's like total, what is the actual situation? Let's not jump to any conclusions until we know what's going on. And then we get this great contrast with Obi-Wan and eventually Senator Chuchi as well, where Chairman Cho is just ignoring all evidence around him so he can see what he expects and wants to see. Like he's got that comfort of, I know the situation, that arrogance of, I know the situation. And even when there's evidence to the contrary, he wants to believe that the separatists did this. And then once he sees it's the Talls, there's no consideration that they might be an advanced, intelligent, sentient species with full rights to that planet. He's just already decided. His mind is closed. No other evidence is going to change his mind. No interpretation from 3PO. It's just period. This is the way it is. So I think between Obi-Wan, I think this is another good episode where Anakin listens to his better judgment and to his noble Jedi side. As you're saying, Chuchi really stands up and makes brave choices, and all those open minds, even the Talls are open-minded. It's all in great contrast to Chairman Cho is just not open to anything different than what his preconceived notions are.
Yeah, it's funny. I put a note there too. I said, the truth is in front of you. How you react to it, how you choose to deal with it directly affects you and your people. And I just put this quote down by Chairman, impossible. He says that a lot. He says that attitude a lot. Yeah. And that use of savages, it's like you said, it just puts, I have a preconceived notion. Therefore this is it. We are going to go, that only leads us to one direction.
And yeah.
Yeah. All there. The truth is in front of you.
Yeah. And all of his, you know, savage, you don't have write this place. It's ugly. It's really hard, but I think it is good to have to kind of look that in the face in the sort of safety of a space fantasy show and look at, you know, the ugliness of it.
Yeah.
Final theme for me, you really kind of already touched on, is just that idea of what is service to your people with this back and forth of chairman. Again, I think another example of having a closed mind. He's not open to Senator Chuchi knowing more because she's young and naive, I think, to him. But, you know, him really thinking, you know, fighting and dying is the height of service. And I think that quote that you highlighted of Senator Chuchi saying living for your people is better. And I think there's even just like this little bit of that with Thay Sen, where he tries to say, hey, look, you know, get off the planet. Leave us alone. I asked you twice. Now I'm just defending our home from this guy who said we don't belong here and he's going to wipe us out. But even right at the end there, when he's charging the clones and his people are fallen, the Narglatches are fallen, there's a one shot of him that feels like, is he going, is it even worth this? You know? Yeah. And so I think we even get this little flash for Thay Sen of, you know, what is service to your people? And the big one at the end that he's like, yeah, even after I asked you twice to leave, and your guy threatened genocide and slaughtered me, I'm still going to give you another chance, Senator Chuchi, you know?
Yeah.
That's high service to his people.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and all those clones dying for nothing is super, super, super painful when you think about service to your government, your cause.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not new to me, yeah.
Yeah. You pulled in some of this already, but how do you think the themes of this episode reflect a larger story, morality, perspective of Star Wars?
I think at the end, what does Obi-Wan say to Chuchi about, you know, keep this peace kind of going? I wrote a little notes, not this one. I've just, it'll end this war and then all the wars everywhere in a roundabout sort of way.
Yeah. It felt like underlining that sort of that cycle of violence thing of like almost what, we were talking about a little bit on our, Prophecy of the Chosen One of like balance needs to be maintained. Mm-hmm. This cycle of peace needs to be maintained and you started well, let's keep it up.
Yeah, keep it up. And then this is also kind of a canon lore connection to me, but also the idea, you know, Padme saying in Revenge of the Sith that this war is about a failure to communicate, right?
Yeah.
And you can see that there it is really highlighted here. This is just, I mean, you know, 3PO plays a big part because we need better communication. Bring the protocol droid. I think that connects to the big picture of what's going on and part of the Star Wars story.
Yeah, failure to listen. Yeah, it's a great 3PO episode. I love that little beat where he's where Chuchi doesn't know his name. It's like protocol droid.
Yeah.
And Anakin's like, you got to go, 3PO, because normally 3PO would be like, do I really need to go into that danger? And Anakin's just so firm. It's fun to me. For larger storytelling, I really was thinking about the difficult and attempted path of nobility of the Jedi. I think everything that Senator Chuchi is going through as well, it really reflects that. Boy, is it easier to just go, here are all my enemies. They are my enemies. Anything that bad happened there, it's their fault. And it's noble if I fight them. And that's, boy, is that easier if that's your life outlook, the way it is for Chairman Cho. But I really was affected by the Jedi in this episode, once again, really having to wrestle with when to act and when not. They are, you know, the defenders of peace and justice after you fill out a petition, you know, and get the right forms. And it just really felt it of Obi-Wan and Anakin were like, they were so in sync with one another. They were in sync with the Talls, with the situation. They had it handled. But then they were kind of just trapped in all the red tape of the government and the Jedi Council. And that really made me think about that balance between you watch a show like this and your emotional reaction can be, well, why don't Obi-Wan and Anakin just, they right there, they know what's best. Why don't they just make it happen? You know, but then at the same time, would that be arrogance? You know, certainly waiting for holocalls to, you know, fill out petitions for the Jedi Council to intervene sounds like they're not willing to get their hands dirty and do anything. But then on the other side, is it a is it a good balance to say, we shouldn't always be making these decisions for other people? It's your government. This is a Pantoran issue. So we got to step back.
Mm. Yeah, I think that fosters some growth for the Pantorans, governments all around the galaxy. I don't know. The Jedi out in the galaxy. A lot of what you're saying, I'm like, wonder how much we're going to see this in the High Republic, too. Just going around helping.
Yeah. If they feel a little bit more untethered. Did you have an emotional reaction to that when things were really dire and like a bunch of people were going to die and a war was going to happen? And Obi-Wan was like, you could petition. did you have a visceral reaction to that of like, Obi-Wan, solve it?
Not as much. I know you study the moves, the sins and successes of Obi-Wan, which is a great book that you should write. The sins and hello there, the sins and successes of Obi-Wan Kenobi. You and I have been talking so much about the bigger lessons, particularly the sequel trilogy and destiny and choices and heroes. I do like that they're kind of like, we're here to, it's Qui-Gon. We can't fight a war for you. I like keeping to that. So I don't know. It was more in line to the overall thinking for me.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Almost every episode of the Clone Wars, I think it must just have been that Lucas and Filoni and everybody were really interested in this real core Star Wars idea of the organic and the flowing versus the rigid and technical. It pops up in a lot of episodes just visually. The Lerman, versus the, defoliator that's going to destroy all organic matter and all that kind of stuff. But this one, like, there was a real callback to the Ewoks where the Tulls, in general, a lot of their attacks work because they are one with the environment. Their, technology is kind of a part of the environment, and getting those visuals of them riding the Narglatches versus the clones on their Freako bikes. And then even more combining that with kind of some of the ideas that I was feeling of like, there's these just kind of organic flowing personal interactions happening on the planet, but the people on the planet can't just decide this by themselves. They're still a part of this more, rigid political red tape, and that's got to be respected too. So there's a lot of ideas of organic versus rigid in this to me.
Yeah, and there's some, I think Joel Aaron, who was a visual effects supervisor at ILM, if you read the notes of this episode, had this great idea of the snow changing along with the kind of the emotions of the story, right? So that to me becomes very organic. And when at the end, Chuchi, Senator Chuchi is flowing with what's going on, right? And she's connecting with the planet and the organic, the snow goes from a harsh sideways storm to a light dusting in that one moment. And so it all ties into the organic to me.
Wow. I really, as somebody who grew up in Minnesota and spent some time with some snow, I respect that. Snow, snow is different. There's lots of different kinds of snow. For me, one other kind of big picture thing that I thought was reflected in this episode is just this general focus in Star Wars often, even when it hasn't had the greatest gender representation, it's pretty consistent that young female leaders are great. I mean, Ryo Chuchi really stepping up and absolutely being the hero of the episode and having the great philosophy. She gets, doubted and judged by Cho. Obi-Wan really says, like, it's not my responsibility. You got to go do it. And she does. And she absolutely kills it. It really connects her to in the same era, of Padme and Brea and Princess Fanry from the Master and Apprentice book. And obviously Leia in Star Wars is our first young female leader who is absolutely great. But it was just really cool to see that theme be so strong and so present.
Yeah, and a little tease, actually, Star Wars Ranked this week with Lauren Roma from the Galactic Podcast. We're ranking best female moments in Clone Wars. I was moved by this one. Chuchi just shot up the list for me. We haven't technically recorded the episode yet, so anything could happen, and Sunday Star Wars Rank could be best Y-Wing moments, but that's what we're planning on. This is a pretty big moment, there are a lot of those in Clone Wars, so I'm glad you brought that up.
Excellent. Any more for you, or should we take a break?
We can take a break.
Excellent. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk more details of Trespass.
We'll be right back. Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Force Center fans, don't forget Force Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's Force Center on YouTube. Check it out.
Are back to discuss all the fun action, comedy, canon, lore connections of Trespass. So let's dive into action. Ken, did you have some favorite action moments in this episode that was all about it's sad that violence is happening?
Yeah. I was like, oh, I love that. Wait a minute. No, look, I'll tell you what, Rex is pretty darn cool. He's got some skills. He also is very strong. He lifted up Chairman Chow with like one hand and just hung him over his back. There's some, I loved kind of the, when they circle up for defense. It's a great moment. And like the bikes come sliding in and like Rex is like right there already. It was a good kind of suitcase. And then on the other side, the Tall's just riding in those Narglatches, like pretty cool visuals, pretty cool kind of almost medieval warriors riding horses into battle. Dothraki too, in my head, kind of connected with that. So I really liked a lot of those little moments, but I did focus on Rex for all, you know, all the needless death in this. Rex is pretty good at his job.
Yeah. And I love that story too with Rex. It was like, I don't want to do this, but okay, I'll protect him. Great. I will protect this guy. That's what my Jedi generals asked me to do. And now a bunch of people are dying, so I got to fire back because they're going to kill us. It's like, yeah. And he did really well with that. Like I said, I love the visuals this episode. I loved all the snow stuff. The Tall's popping out of the snow in particular is both a cool visual and a literal nightmare that I have had growing up in Minnesota of what is under the snow.
That's awesome.
What snow monsters have I offended? So great stuff. I really love the design of the Freako bikes. I looked it up. That's what they're called, and they're super cool. In that great contrast between them and the Narglatches, we did the Beasts of Burden episode a while back, kind of deep diving into all these different kind of creatures. And there's so many. I kind of forgot about how awesome the Narglatches are, that they're great design, just be kind of a different beast of burden. But I love how kind of scary they are, right? They're so fast and they look so ferocious. And I think it really sells Rex being like, oh, geez, I don't want to fire, but I have to fire back because these Talls are warriors who know their environment and they are on top of these creatures that they are entirely in sync with. And that creature looks like it could kill me if it gave me a nasty look, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They reminded me, you got the Warg Riders in Game, not Game of Thrones, but Seas to Sing, Game of Thrones, Lord of Rings, you know, vicious and they're always kind of connected to the bad side, and to have the Talls have these kind of scary, intimidating creatures that they ride, but their use is maybe heroic a little bit in this episode, maybe a lot of it. I like that. I'm glad you brought that up.
So I think all those shots were my favorite. And then the snow bridge collapse, I felt really bad liking it because I was so sad for those clones who were just at that point in the episode, clearly dying for no reason. But you know what? Snow bridges collapse. These things happen. It's a good life lesson. How about comedy or moments of whimsy or weirdness? Did you have any favorites there?
I like Obi-Wan being hugged when they're going for the negotiation. you mentioned it earlier, but when he says, they're like, oh, footprints, and Obi-Wan's just like, have one of your men make a cast. I'm like, wait a minute. Are the clones traveling Bigfoot hunters? Like, they could just do a cast right there of a footprint. This is amazing. And I really love that.
It is such a CSI clones episode. We're like, what all equipment are they carrying that Obi-Wan's just barking this?
Yeah, it's in that pack.
This goes along with the grown up in Minnesota. I love when they first come out of the ship, the gunship, and Obi-Wan says, and this is the planet's tropical zone. It's just a great kind of having whimsy, also maybe just a little grumpy of like, great, snow planet.
Yeah.
Awesome. A little bit of sarcasm from Obi-Wan. It's dark comedy for me, but after everything that Chairman Cho has done, after he has been offered to stand down multiple times, and then he threatens to wipe them all out, and then he gets hit in the back with that spear, and then says savages. Right after getting hit in the back by the consequences of his own actions. It's just it's the point of the episode, but it is so on the nose as to be really darkly funny to me of like, yeah. Who's the savage? Who caused this? How avoidable was that sharp thing in your back, dude?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, chow.
Yeah. Last moment of comedy wins me for me of, you know, I like the light little bit of Obi-Wan and Anakin banter as they're going there about Obi-Wan going like, don't pull out your lightsaber. Anakin just reaches for it right away. And the kind of teasing about you should have brought 3PO. And, you know, Anakin just immediately drawing a peace picture. And then the peace picture is just like two people shaking hands.
They're like bulbous, ghostly, Casper the Friendly Ghost, abominable snowman looking. I love it. I want to frame that on my wall.
Yeah, I really, really love it. Of just like his skills as the Chosen One are endless. They include also artwork to communicate peace.
Yes.
All right. We've gotten to, I think, the most important part of this episode, which is connections to other canon and lore, because, of course, we get to discuss all the Jedi winter weather gear. What did you like when it comes to other connections to canon?
I liked, let's see. And Anakin used this most impressive, right? Which yes. you've been tracking the, hey, that's a line I know from in season one of Clone Wars, right? Yep. And this is definitely one of them, but I do like it. And he says that other times too. You know, you and I always joke the Force Center drinking games. Well said. I'll say absolutely a lot at the end. I kind of, you know, we have our little go-to phrases. So if I suddenly was to become a Sith Lord, I might say absolutely. And that would, you know, I'd be like, oh, I remember when you used to say that a lot on a podcast. And so I do like that one. That one to me goes a little deeper than just, hey, it's a reference to a movie I liked.
Yeah. And I think the fact for me that it wasn't the exact phrasing of impressive, most impressive, you know, it's just like most impressive. Yeah. It really tracked for me. Mm-hmm. Right along with that, I really liked Obi-Wan saying, now is the time. It's always been one of my favorite line readings from Revenge of the Sith. So that was fun to hear Obi-Wan. Again, because I think that you're really hitting on something. So well said. Take a shot. Of sometimes they come off as meta. They come off as the character said the line that we all know and love. And other times it just feels like that's the way the character talks. That's the kind of phraseology they would use. And now is the time. I feel like Obi-Wan says that in important moments about, you know, battles or stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility. And I think he probably says that to Dexter of like, Dexter's mm-hmm. like, you want another drink? Now is the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's character stuff. It's character work. And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Couple of things for me, just great to see, another Cantina alien kind of getting the full treatment, in this, big on-screen way of the Talls. I looked up Muftak as there's so much, emphasis in this episode that the Talls are native to Ordo Plutonia and they probably don't have the technology to leave. And I looked up Muftak's Wikipedia and he was mysteriously dropped off. On Tatooine, which is why he's not hanging out with his other Talls. So I enjoyed that. I also just liked that the Pantorans were a fun, you know, cameo basically in Revenge of the Sith, in that this is one of the, you know, the first season of the Clone Wars going through who were characters or species or cultures just in the background. Who do we want to highlight in that? This episode is not just taking these background aliens and, you know, filling out their culture and making them important. This episode is like, it's the ascendancy of Lucas, right? It's the ascendancy of Papanoida. Yeah. Chairman Chow has to die so there can be a Chairman Papanoida, right?
Yeah, he is the next chairman. That was one of my canon connections too of this is what's comes next. And Papanoida, you know, is in future episodes. And they flash back to Cho, I do believe. Can't wait to get to those ones. So, yeah. And I like, because it, you know, you got two. You got the a Cantina creature, Muftak. So that's just kind of fun. But now you are expanding the scope of some of these characters in the prequels. I like that. That works well for me.
Yeah. What other lore connections do you have?
So we did mention, and I'll get the quote more right this time. This war is about a failure to listen from Padme. I mean, that is it's connections, connection to that moment. It makes that moment even more important. It makes Padme's insight to me, even in Revenge of the Sith, a movie that doesn't necessarily do Padme 100% correctly. It does kind of show her insight, her point of view. It's pretty solid and pretty important to the big Star Wars picture. There is the idea of Obi-Wan is the negotiator. The negotiator. And they actually say this, you know, hey, Obi-Wan, can you go negotiate? So he's got some skills. He's got, it's on his resume.
Oh, this will day, be a day long remembered that you found some Obi-Wan nuance that that I did not focus on. That's great. That's great. Yeah, I love that you're pointing that out about Padme too. And it goes to, I think, the bigger picture of the tragedy of the Clone Wars and the horrible success of Darth Sidious's plan. If Padme, and there'll be other episodes of this coming up in Clone Wars, but if Padme and Senator Chuchi and other people like them had been successful, successfully been allowed to have diplomacy, to listen, to talk, eventually I think a lot of separatists would go like, hey, wait, this thing we're involved in isn't right, you know, and that's all of the groundwork for that. And all those connections are being laid that, you know, if we'd listened to all these young politicians, the Clone Wars maybe could have been averted or ended peacefully. Yeah, the other two other things for me is just the it was powerful. It's always been a cool visual, but to see the clone helmets on spikes in the snow was extra powerful now that that is, you know, an image that appears again very powerfully in the Clone Wars.
And Filoni really loves this because Mandalorian 2, we got helmets, spikes.
Helmets and spikes, two great things that go great together. And then to me, the biggest thing of all of it is just all of this Hoth stuff, the you know, to see the clone troopers in sort of snow trooper gear, all that Jedi winter weather stuff is just, it's so cool. And I love seeing those, that's just a fashion in the galaxy for winter weather gear. And I love the prominent Jedi symbol. And I really love that Rex has this different set of armor for this different environment. But he also took the time to be like, oh, I got to paint my Rex stuff on it.
Yeah, yeah. Which, you know, we got some Imperial Snowtrooper kind of designs showing up here, right? And I love that. I love the clones. The individuality the clones are able to find in something so standard issue, and that includes them. It's always a theme that pops up in these episodes, and I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Was there anything in this episode that you disliked or questioned?
No, I going back to when it's originally popped up, and it clearly had some affinity for it because of the jackets, which is interesting. But I think I was, I mean, what I'm questioning is myself back in the day of, I didn't gravitate to a lot of the episodes that had quote weird creatures, even though this was a cantina creature, even though I knew George Lucas was one of those, you know, I didn't know, you know, back in the day, didn't pay attention too much to those minor details. And I'm questioning myself as to why did I just want to see droids fighting clone troopers? Is that what I really wanted? I don't know. And that's been part of the fun of rewatching these episodes is at the start of it, press and play on Disney Plus in 2020 going, oh yeah, I remember this episode. I don't think it was one of my favorites. And then the episode finishes and I'm like, I don't know what about that wasn't good for me. It's been a great journey, and it's nothing about this episode, just questioning myself back in the day.
Yeah. Did you have that reaction when you first saw the Talls and you're like, oh, yeah, it's a cantina alien? Did you have any sort of knee-jerk reaction of, like, stop revisiting old stuff, stop recontextualizing stuff from the original trilogy?
Not necessarily. I got it. But you know what I think? It just hit me maybe as you're describing it, because I'm not going that direction with it. I'm just going, I think I went back in the day of, what does this have to do with the story I know and love already? And even then having maybe a secret, more quieter appreciation, definitely for Revenge of the Sith and for the prequels overall, but going, just get to the good stuff, so to speak.
Ignite those lightsabers.
Yeah. Yeah. No, right. Seriously. Yeah. Ignite it. I don't need these, you know, creatures high on scary wolves here. I don't need that. I need the Star Wars story. And then, now looking back, and even not now, but even over the last few years, doing a big rewatch, you know, I think about 2015, I went through all of it again, just like going, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. There's a bigger connective thread at play that I just was skipping over, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm right there with you that these episodes are really, they're really solid by themselves. And, you know, the morals are often like really clear, which is, you know, helped by the fact that the episode begins with a moral.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes you can be like, yep, this one's about, you know, violence is bad. Try not to do it. Great. And yeah. I think that is great. But when you start to put it in the whole larger, you know, political context of the Clone Wars and the Jedi attempt to, you know, prosecute this war, but also stay true to their ideals, each of these episodes become more and more rich when you imagine, oh, well, Senator Chuchi and Senator Padme, they are, you know, working together and they have similar goals and, you know, all that stuff. It just really becomes more and more rich. And I think I really enjoyed this episode when I first watched it. But, you know, it's fun to get to this point for me where it's like, it's an episode where Obi-Wan and Anakin come off as heroes doing great and they didn't ignite their lightsabers. And I'm like, what a weird thing for me to go like, that was a great episode of Star Wars. Do you know why? The Jedi didn't ignite their lightsabers because philosophically, that's the hope that they don't have to.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. Wow. Yeah. That's huge. Actually, what you just said, that's huge.
Yeah.
We want this to ignite them, ignite the grain. The point is to not.
Yeah. The point is like, hey, don't Anakin, don't just go right to the lightsaber. Instead, literally go to the drawing board, dude. Works out so well. I got lost in a tangent about how much I liked it instead of talking about anything I disliked your question. You know, I had a question in the middle that by the time it was done was resolved for me of wondering if we needed more about why Chairman Cho was so arrogant, so rigid, so kind of vile in his treatment and outlook of the Tulls. But I think really just that few speeches about like, I have seen many battles and you know, yeah, you have, and you can't see anything outside that frame. I think I came around to like not needing a deep or specific motivation for him, but rather appreciating that really light touch of just saying, hey, you know, there are people like this who've had legitimate experiences, but then they become so affected by them that they aren't open to a different viewpoint. Yeah. And I think that's ultimately more powerful than learning, you know, the Tulls killed his dad, you know?
Right, right. At the Battle of Tulls City. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree. And sometimes, yeah, we want those. Sometimes that, and that information can come and it's and great and exciting and it's fun. But yeah, the answer is right there on the board. So yeah, I agree with you.
Anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
I mean, not for nothing, but 3PO is pretty important. He's there for some key moments, and I love when 3PO gets a little bit of just them going, oh, we should have brought 3PO. I like that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is a pretty great episode where usually when 3PO and R2 are in an episode, R2 does the heavy lifting of actually helping people out, and 3PO is the one who's really important in this episode is great.
Yeah, I mean, because R2's got some stuff here, and I love the connection of, you know, R2 wants to get out of the cold, you know, and it's...
And putting up the sensors, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of that, but yeah, this is definitely a 3PO shines moment.
Yeah, yeah, and that just that great moment of him calling him Master Annie, too, is fun, and being like, we don't have time for you to say how scared you are, 3PO, go do this, period.
Just
such great energy. As we begin to wrap up, we head into some of our fun questions. If you could have an action figure of any character from this episode, who do you want?
I mean, I think we need a Huggin' Towels plush figure that just hugs when a Jedi is near. But also, I do want an official, I mean, maybe even a Black Series 6-inch to scale Thaisen riding an Arglatch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be great. I did look up. There is a Thaisen action figure. They made so many great action figures of these early episodes. So I'm tempted to just say, I want to buy that. I also looked up Snowtrooper Rex. I saw there's a video of a custom one. But I think the fun one that I would want is a Jedi Knight Anakin Skywalker with art materials. And you can draw on his little pad and then you can erase it and draw other little pictures.
I like that. Yeah. A little Anakin art set. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can draw a little portrait of Padme and have him stare at it.
Yeah.
Next up then for us, if you want to keep up with watching the Clone Wars, is a two-parter Blue Shadow Virus, Season 1, Episode 17, and Mystery of a Thousand Moons, Season 1, Episode 18. There's some fun, weird stuff coming our way. Ken, we are going to wrap up as we always do with our moral. What should the moral of this episode of our podcast be?
No matter what the path is in front of you, bring a jacket.
Always bring your Hoth winter weather gear is a great moral, good practical advice, and just, you know, emotionally, philosophically important too. Ken, do you want to know, let people know where where people can find us?
I absolutely do. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center to join the conversation. Like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram and YouTube. Subscribe over there. You can find us on Anchor, but also iHeartMedia, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and a whole bunch of other places. You can go get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter, or even support the podcast here directly on Anchor if you want. Or as we always say, a good way to support the show is just tell a friend about Force Center. Oh, we got our own things going on, too. That's right. We got our own things going on. You can go to KenAffleck.com for information on all the things I do outside the Star Wars world. You, Joseph?
Yeah, you can check out my website at josephscrimshaw.com for all my other comedy adventures. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram is at Joseph Scrimshaw. But for now, for Thysen, son of sons, for myself, for Ken, and of course, for Anakin Skywalker and Hoth winter weather gear and drawing board, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.